This episode is brought to you by Diageo Bar Academy. Learn more at DiageoBarAcademy.com. That's D-I-A-G-E-O BarAcademy.com.
So you don't shun the devil with your rock and roll, Lord. Knows that country music's gonna save your soul. The devil runs his groove in them rhythm and blues that Sam. It's gonna get you some.
Welcome back to the Speakeasy. I'm Damon Bolte.
My name is Souther Teague.
And I'm Greg Benson.
Gentlemen, the band's all back together.
Yeah. I know. The band's back together.
Yeah. It's been a few episodes, three or four since I've been on. I've been quite busy traveling and doing other things.
We couldn't get the team together because somebody had to go to Hawaii for his birthday.
It was my birthday, man. It was twinsmas. Me and my twin brother. We turned 40. I turned 40, guys.
Yeah, that's a big deal, man. How you feeling? Any different?
I feel 1 year older. But no, it is. It does feel weird. It's like I feel like when I turned 30, I was like, okay, I survived my 20s. Like I don't have to do that again. I could look back and I'd be like, you know what? That was incredible. It's incredible that I survived, but it was also just a lot of fun. You know, I got to start traveling the world and, you know, playing in bands and stuff. And then now I look back at my 30s and I'm like, holy shit, that was really insane too. I don't have the same feeling as I did when I turned 30. Like when I was like, oh, you know what? Thank God that's over. 30s, right. I'm still like, you know what? I still feel like I'm in my 30s, but let's see what 40s are like, I guess. But, you know, it's... did a lot of cool things in my 30s too, so can't wait to see what the 40s bring. I mean, Greg, you'll probably get there in 12 years or whenever.
give or take. Yeah. That's what I'm on track for. We'll see. We'll see if it's how it plans out.
Yeah. But yeah, Hawaii was great. You know, it's just really weird. It was my first flight since we went to Oaxaca, Souther. Almost a year and a half ago. And
crazy.
You know, it's a different world out there. You know, on the flights, they weren't serving drinks. You had to do COVID tests between every island, or, you know, for Hawaii. And just, you know, it's been a very different world, but it's kind of weird that it's like opening up now and that, you know, it's nothing really, it doesn't feel like everyone's on the same page, you know, like it should be this thing where it's like, all right, we've had all this time to prep for this. And we should all just like basically hit play and, you know, roll it out. But I don't know if it's been that way in New York, but like it's certainly been that way out in California as well.
May or may not know, as of yesterday here in New York, we are now back to restaurants and bars can be at full capacity without spacing.
Same here in California.
Masks aren't necessary. We can be back to our normal hours. So for all intents and purposes, the government has released us to be, you know, fully operational. Now, again, of course, that's up to the establishment to relax those rules on their own. And I think some are going to slowly go into it and some are going to jump right into it headlong. And I think that's what you're talking about. Like we're not all on the same page.
Right. Exactly.
Which is making it, you know, confusing to the consumer. It's going to be a bumpy ride for all of us, I think, for the next couple of weeks for sure.
Yeah, and there's also this issue where I was told by our compliance team that they're like, all right, so here's how it works. People can have their masks off inside if they're vaccinated. And I'm like, so am I, like, what do I do? Do I force them to show me proof of that? Or do I just let it go, you know? Because I also want, you know, the safety of my team. So it's like one of those things as well. So it's definitely an issue. I can't even say that there's really a system in place right now that to speak of that's across the board, you know, for bars and restaurants and not just, you know, like retail establishments as well. You know, it's a tricky time, but I mean, I think that I'm still happy about the fact that we have some progress on this whole thing. It's just, you know, it's in a pretty damn gray area right now.
There is an app for that. You know, there's that app that you can download, at least in New York. I don't know if I think it only taps into the New York State database. So I mean, other, yeah. You know, that's the thing. It's like if you're coming from, I don't know, Philly, and you want to go out for a drink in Brooklyn, like, I don't know what you do then. I mean, it's the whole thing of like, you know, you bartend for a while and you sort of know like what various states' driver's license look like. So, you know, when you get someone who looks real young giving you an ID, you're like, I'm pretty sure Rhode Island state ID doesn't have the words Rhode Island in bubble letters, bud. Like, I don't think you can drink here. But, you know, that's the thing. It's like, are we going to have some whole 50 different apps to prove these things? I mean, it just gets into a whole confusing gray area. The other thing is that, you know, I actually haven't downloaded this app yet. I have my vaccine card. And when I've gone to present it to people, more often than not, they've just gone, ah, you're good, man. Go on ahead. And I mean, I guess it's a nice confirmation that I have a trustworthy face or something, but still it's a little, I don't know. It's a brave new world that we're all going to have to learn how to navigate and sort of figure out the best system on the fly, which is a little frustrating because, you know, we had a year and a half. But we were busy to be fair.
Yeah. I think my system is if you push back at all,
you're out.
You're not vaccinated. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Like you're out. Yeah.
That's it. You know, like if I say, are you vaccinated? Oh, yeah, of course. Yeah. Whatever. And I'm like, oh, you're absolutely not.
Yeah. Well, that's what you get for trampling on their First Amendment rights, Damon. I mean, geez. Yeah.
Was it the MAGA hat they were wearing? I don't know.
Yeah. How did they know?
Yeah, anyway. I guess sadly what we're kind of describing is that the unfortunate truth is the individualism that is America means that this is just going to cause more problems. You know, this is just going to get people screaming and we're going to see more videos of people coughing and spitting on each other. And it's just going to be annoying.
Yeah,
but like, I missed it, like Damon. Souther was actually real sunshiny for a couple of weeks where you were gone. He sort of took up the mantle, but it sounds like he's back now.
Yeah, I tried to uphold the rainbow side that is Damon Bolte.
Well,
rainbows. Did you see any rainbows in Hawaii?
Yeah, for sure, man. On my actual birthday, it was pretty incredible. Now I know why they have them emblazoned, you know, all over the license tags on the cars there. It's pretty iconic symbol there. Have you guys been to Hawaii?
We're not rich or lucky or good looking like you are.
I'm neither of those. I just have a really great family and a credit card that I'll pay off over time.
Yes. You got more time than anything. Well, I guess the clock's ticking down on that too. Speaking of rainbows. Yeah, sure. That's what birthdays are, man. They're a countdown. Your birthday's just a countdown number.
And he's back. He's back, yeah, ladies and gentlemen.
I'm back in force. Speaking of rainbows, Greg, who's in the studio with us today?
Joining us in the studio from St. Luna Spirits, making a fine charcoal-filtered moonshine, we have Aubrey Slater and David Sook. Thank you so much for joining us, both of you. How are you?
Doing well. Thank you for having us.
Yeah, thank you, guys. Really excited to be on the show today.
Yeah, it's going to be great.
Anytime, yeah.
You're my first guest.
I basically forced Souther to make this happen, so...
Nice. You didn't have to force me. I wanted you on the radio.
Yeah.
You've got a good story to tell, and we're excited to hear about it.
Thank you.
Yeah, I mean, let's hear some of that 40s, story,
y'all.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Well, how about this?
I love that we.
I'll let David lead that off.
You know, I was just going to say, I love that we get introduced as the Rainbow People.
Yeah,
that makes me feel good.
I think it's appropriate, and we're midway really through cool. Pride Month, and you two are maybe, we haven't done enough research, but kind of maybe among the first anyway to be openly gay and trans and operating a spirits business. Do we know if that's true or not?
I haven't met any others.
Right. I mean, surely it's there, but maybe not so, open. You know, I carry a few different bitters at the bar that are willing to be that. But as soon as I saw that someone was like, we're the first to be openly, I was like, oh, that's a good caveat. We're the first to be open. There are probably some that aren't because there may or may not be pushback, which sucks, right?
This is true.
Yeah. So let's talk a little bit about how everything got going. David, you've been working on the project for a while, and Aubrey, you just kind of got on board relatively recently, but let's talk about sort of the origin story of the spirit itself.
Yeah, absolutely, Sado. So I had this idea a couple of years ago, and it was really about sort of modernizing the moonshine space, you know, making it more accessible, much more cocktail forward. And, you know, I originally had that idea because I wanted to get into the spirits game, but I knew that, you know, I didn't have this like 100, 200 year family recipe of whiskey, or, you know, I didn't have millions and millions of dollars in the bank to, you know, help differentiate myself and tell people why I was different. And I just thought, huh, you know, if I could actually be different and sort of be first to market with effectively the first sort of modern day moonshine, you know, then I wouldn't need all of that, that I would truly actually be different. And so it took me a little while to actually get the idea started because I, you know, I had a full-time job and it was super fast paced. And, you know, in that time frame, though, I ended up meeting a gentleman who had been working on this particular recipe for moonshine for about 15 years. And so I flew down to Chattanooga, where he was living. We drove out to his buddy's farm in Georgia, which is pretty much every after school special. You know, they tell you not to do this. I got into a car with a stranger and drove probably 150 miles outside of the city. And, you know, absolute honest truth, I texted a couple friends with my sort of geolocation because I was like, all right, you know, like,
the further
just
you
please
wind
check
into
in,
the
make
woods,
sure I come
yeah.
home.
What could possibly go wrong?
In the background.
Right? Yeah, like, what could go wrong? This, you know, New York guy going down into the South, into, you know, a farm in the middle of Georgia. What could happen? And so, sure enough, we get to his farm, and he's got a homemade still set up, and we start stilling what, at that point, was his recipe, which is now St. Luna. And it was delicious. I mean, we were drinking it right off the still, and another friend of his had a little bit of old-fashioned syrup that he had made. So we just started mixing it. And I thought to myself, God, like, this is just gorgeous. And if we can sort of pair this with really upscale, pretty packaging, you know, get it out of the mason jars and just make it more approachable for somebody that wants to go in and have a beautiful experience just drinking a moonshine, then we'd be the person to do that and kind of come first to market. So I ended up buying the recipe from him and then made him a partner in the business because I wanted him focused just entirely on making sure that our product was always amazing. You know, new development, quality control, things like that. So we basically hit the market May of 2019. Just started to get a bit of traction. And then, of course, like, COVID shut everything down. So this is effectively our relaunch and, you know, not so bad coming out of the gate.
Not so bad at all. And I love that reluctance to go after, you know, the fact that you're going for something that's not like in a mason jar and isn't going for that whole, like, you know, that very like Appalachian, you know, this was made in someone's backyard next to a rusted up pickup truck aesthetic. Like, I like that it
like
is
God intended
to move away from that space. Exactly.
Boy. It looks good on a back bar, but more than that, it tastes really good and it's versatile. You know, there's limitless amounts of cocktails that you could do with it. And I guess I sort of had the realization that, you know, I'm not George Clooney. So, you know, I'm not going to launch a, you know, $1 billion tequila brand, you know, with $37 in my bank account. You know, like that was never going to happen. And I didn't have this just like amazing family history of producing alcohol and sort of that story to play up. So I thought, how could I carve out my own space that was truly unique and different with, you know, nobody else there?
What got you into spirits in the first place? I mean, like, was it like cocktail bars or was it like did you like work in the industry before? Was it like a home enthusiast kind of thing? Like, what did you get into?
Yeah, it's a great question. I really like to drink them, you know, truth be told. And
join the club.
You know, I've just been able to surround myself with amazing people like Aubrey who have a lot more experience in the bar world than I do.
I bring this.
You know, I'm Yeah, like I'm somebody that just had an idea. You know, I'm not a distiller. You know, I'm a sales and marketing person that had what I think is a great idea. And, you know, I have a partner that manages all our distillation. He's absolutely exceptional at it. He's a chemical engineer by trade. You know, absolutely brilliant, much smarter than I am. And, you know, Aubrey is the absolute queen of, you know, of the bar industry. So it made sense to, you know, yes, have an idea, but then be very conscious of surrounding myself with people that can help me make it a reality.
Awesome. So go ahead, Souther.
I was just going to say, so you went to Chattanooga, but then you mentioned Georgia. Where are you producing currently?
Well, the funny thing is, so I had the idea, right? Now I have my teeny tiny sample. And at the time, one of my favorite bars was Perry Street. You know, it's a Jean-Georges restaurant, and I'd lived right down the street. So I'd always sort of walk in and just have a glass of wine after a long day. And the gentleman behind the bar, who is their bar manager, is a gentleman by the name of Mac from Alabama. And I had said, hey, you know, Mac, do you think that if I created a moonshine, do you guys think you'd be open to trying it? And of course he laughed at me because he's like, no, like we'd never carry that here. You know, it's Jean-Georges, it's just not appropriate. And so sure enough, you know, after I have this little mini sample developed down in Chattanooga, I walk back into Perry Street and I go, hey, Mac, you know, I want you to try something. Like, do you think you'd carry this? And he's like, oh my God, that's delicious. You know? And so sure enough, Jean-Georges ended up being my first customer.
That's not bad.
Yeah. Like we were at his flagship in Central Park West with a moonshine mojito. That wow. was crushing it before COVID.
Wow. And did you say you met him in Chattanooga? Was I hearing that right?
Well, I met my distiller in Chattanooga. So I worked for a company that sold baby blankets for about 12 years. And I know that there's a lot to unpack there, but...
See, right, I don't know what you're talking about. It seems like a logical career jump to me.
Yeah, right. Babies to booze. It was more that I was an entrepreneur. You know, I helped a very good friend of mine build that business over the course of 12 years. And I just, you know, I knew that as an entrepreneur, like I didn't want to continue building somebody else's business. I wanted to build my own. This just happened to be an idea that I came up with that I thought was a good one. So the distiller that created the St. Leonard recipe was actually the lead chemist who developed a skincare range for my last company. And I had discovered that he was this, you know, master moonshiner, you know, in the cloak of night. And, you know, I think everybody sort of has this realization at one point in their life where like you wake up one morning and you go, oh my God, if I have to go into work one more day, like I'm probably going to drive my car through the office, you know,
yeah.
And you know, like I had one of those mornings where I was like, we had been bought by private equity for the second time. You know, there was lots and lots of things happening that I just didn't agree with. And I became the angry asshole at work. And I was like, that's just not who I want to be. And so that morning, as I'm driving to work, I called Scott and I was like, hey, remember a year or so ago, we had talked about you, and your moonshine, do you think I could fly down and actually try it? Because, you know, for me, that was sort of the tipping point to be like, all right, I got to make a move. I don't want to be unhappy for the rest of my life. And, you know, let's see, like maybe this can turn into something. And so sure enough, that kickstarted the whole story to, you know, get me into a stranger's car driving out into a, you know, a farm in Georgia to you steal some moonshine.
You know that if you swap out a few details, that's exactly how the TV show Breaking Bad starts, right?
Right?
What does that make me, Jesse?
Yeah, I think you're Jesse in this scenario.
Oh man, he's the one I didn't like. Okay, fair enough.
And then
great performance.
Sort of,
absolutely.
Yeah, it basically kickstarted there. And I'm one of those people that just believes that the universe gives you what you need at the time that you need it. And so, you know, I had met Scott, which was the universe kind of giving me my distiller. The week or two after, I was at the Small Batch Distillers Conference in Pittsburgh with my little sample of moonshine and, you know, met a husband and wife team at Statesville, North Carolina that said that they could make it for me. You know, and then everything just started to kind of line up. And, you know, I originally met Aubrey actually at Mother of Pearl. You know, and she, you know, she was excited about the product. We became really good friends. And most recently, sort of in the middle of COVID, she came out to Pittsburgh with me to basically help me sell St. Luna. And I was like, I don't want to do this without you.
So here I am.
You know, so can you join the team?
And I said maybe.
Yeah, I think this is. Yeah. I think this is a great tale of serendipity. It just seems, as you said, maybe things were kind of offered to you by the universe, or you just sort of coincidentally ran into the right people also at the right time. You know, it's just as important that everybody's in the right position at that moment. To get
it's
on board.
It's so true. I mean, timing is everything. Because I had had the idea, you know, a few years prior, and it's just, you know, you're working 70 hours a week, traveling around, and it, like, you know, launching a new business wasn't even something I could consider. You know, and just, it was that one morning where I was like, I can't do this anymore, but I've got this great idea. You know, let's give it a try.
So you shifted from 70-hour work weeks of hustling baby blankets. And now you're probably crushing 90-hour work weeks of hustling moonshine.
Yeah, for
but at
no
least you're
salary.
Doing it for yourself. Right? There's a difference.
But you know what? You can't knock back a few baby blankets at the end of the day to unwind, and that's the difference.
Right?
Here. Amen. So you can swaddle yourself in alcohol.
A lot of nights I do, and during the pandemic, a lot of days.
Well, it seems like an appropriate spot. Let's take a quick break and hear from our sponsors, and we'll come right back and keep talking to the team from St. Luna Moonshine. Stay tuned, everybody.
So, guys, as we were talking about at the beginning of the show, New York City is back. No restrictions. As of yesterday, everything is fully open, which is wild, right?
Yeah, a little bit exciting, a little bit terrifying. It's arousing. It's arousing and scary. I'm a bit scaroused by the notion.
Hornified. The word is hornified, Souther.
Yes, hornified and scaroused.
It's crazy. It's crazy to see, like, just how many bars still are able to use their outdoor seating, and the people are coming for us, man. So, like, we actually have more seating than ever before. It's pretty crazy. But that's New York for you. Always rocking and rolling.
Absolutely. And, you know, I mean, on this show this summer, we've been talking about a lot of the resources that are available for bartenders because, you know, we haven't done this in a little while. And we've been talking about how this is going to be the summer of fundamentals. You know, it's like people are going to want to come out and re-experience the drinks they love. But you know what? As people get out there and as people are, you know, chasing that high that they've been missing for like a couple of years, they're probably going to want, they're going to want something extra. They're going to want something kind of special. Which is where I will say, as I've been saying, people should check out DiageoBarAcademy.com, because not only do they have all of the, you know, the skill level classes for everybody from bar back to beverage director, as we've been talking about this summer, they have, particularly this month of June, master classes. So if you want to check out tips on how to make things like draft cocktails, how to work that new frozen machine, how to make cocktails into popsicles, you should definitely go and RSVP Bam. For a number of these can't miss masterclasses on DiageoBarAcademy.com.
I can't wait to figure out how to make a zombie popsicle. That's going to be my thing for summer.
Limit two.
Oh my
Only have
God.
Two. Yeah, after exactly. that, chaos yeah, will ensue. Hey, Souther, ask me if the masterclasses are behind a paywall.
What do these masterclasses cost, Greg?
Well, they're free, of course, just like everything else that's on there. So you should definitely go and RSVP for them and try them out. Because, I mean, there's, like I said, there's something for everybody there. And you really, not to get all preachy about it here, but you should never stop learning, and there's always something to check out there. No matter whether you're looking to brush up on the fundamentals or learn a new skill, you really can't go wrong at DiageoBarAcademy.com.
Absolutely. Stay informed, inspired, and connected to grow your career or business by joining Bar Academy today. Souther, spell it out for us.
That's Diageo Bar Academy, DiageoBarAcademy.com.
He loves that.
I do love it.
It's his favorite part.
Cheers, everyone.
Hey, and we're back. You're listening to The Speakeasy on Heritage Radio Network. And today we have our lovely friends Aubrey and David in the studio, the virtual studio. For now, I was just thinking, guys, it's going to be like, and this might be a Heritage Radio question, but we should be able to get into the actual studio soon again, I would assume.
Well, right? I just got a message actually via text from Katie Mosman Wadler with some sort of one of those surveys that they send out once in a while. And the title of this one, I haven't opened it yet, but the title of it is "Hot Host Thoughts on HRN Studio Reopening." I haven't opened it up yet, but I assume that that's coming down the pipeline. However, Damon, I would consider that maybe our show never goes back because you're not nearby, and this seems to work quite well.
I'm worried about all the liqueurs and vermouths that are in our speakeasy bar in the studio.
You're worried about I'm well, hopeful more like that someone's pilfered them by now.
Yeah, I'm sure they have. I mean, like, my hope is that anyone who works at Heritage Radio has eased their pain through the pandemic by tapping into our library of liqueurs.
Well, either that or we're going to open up the studio and it's going to be like a scene from Indiana Jones where it's just like all of this like glittering treasure that's been unseen for years.
Just yeah, exactly.
To be discovered.
Yeah, well, and hopefully, we'll get some fresh bottles in there.
We should head back into the studio and have a party.
Yeah. Get some fresh bottles in there. We need some St. Luna in there, right?
Absolutely. We'll make the drinks.
Oh, you don't have to do that. You're a guest. Yeah. And also,
but if you insist.
Go ahead, David. It's all yours.
We'll watch.
Speaking of making drinks, though, Aubrey's been bartending all over the country for quite some time, and you've tapped into her as a resource for your company to be sort of the face of like how to use the product. Shockingly, people don't know how to use something that you just drink right off the bat. So, Aubrey, what's been your role, and how are you a part of the company?
I met David when I was managing Honey Bees and Mother Pearl and Amoria Margot, and he came in on a Sunday night, and it just happened to coincide with, Sazerac Sunday upstairs, where I was like entertaining 40 swing dance enthusiasts in a band, and then downstairs at Mother of Pearl, I had Doom Tiki with guest bartenders and death metal. And then, of course, like the normal busy, crazy night that Amoria Margot always had. So I was the only manager. So my head was on a swivel. I was, burning rubber up and down stairs, checking on everybody, making sure everything was in order. And Chalky Tom introduced David to me. And, at first it was, nice conversation. And, the soft sell was there. And I was just like, I want to taste it. I want to, have this conversation, but I was just like, boy, this is not the day for any of that kind of stuff. So we exchanged information. Yeah, it was crazy. Death metal and swing dancing. I mean, what a beautiful combination. So
that's New York.
Yeah, where it is in a nutshell, right on 6 and A. And, so we exchanged information, and then, like he said, like the pandemic hit like right after that, because this was, I believe, either end of January or beginning of February. And I just got this like text message from him one day, like, hey, what are you up to? You want to hang out? And I'm just like, at first trying to figure out who it was. And I was like, oh, okay, yeah, no, I remember. And we ended up like, I went down to his apartment. He was living right near Central Park. And it was like me, him, and his dogs in Central Park having wine and just hanging out. And, he offered me a chance to help, promote St. Luna with a commission in sales. And
so basically like a brand, almost like a brand rep at first.
Yeah, pretty much. It was like, no pressure, no stress. If you're out and about, mention the product, see what you can do. I'll give you a bottle. But I mean, at this point in time, I was basically in hermit mode. I was up here in the Bronx, I wasn't taking the train anywhere south. You know, it's definitely not going to Manhattan, other than really to see him. And then when it really, I think, clicked for us was he said he was going into a photo studio, that they were going to do some photo shoots, and he wanted me to style cocktails for him. And we just had a blast, and I came up with like 3 or 4 different cocktails for him. One with like an Earl Grey syrup that I wanted to call Moonlight Kingdom, like a coffee drink, a couple other ones. And we just, that kind of just like bumped up, you know, the potential professional relationship as well as the friendship itself. And then like David mentioned earlier, he said he had to go out to Pittsburgh because we had just signed on with Vintage. So we got Jersey, Delaware, and Pennsylvania. And the fact that I'm originally from Pittsburgh and that I had lived there for 3 years and knew a lot of the bartenders in the craft cocktail scene there, that it seemed like the obvious choice that I went out with him. And I think we did really well. We opened up almost 10 accounts. People were raving about us. And on the car ride home, he just like, it was like he popped the question. And I, you know, do you want to be like, oh my God, this is probably the closest I'm going to get to a proposal. So yes, absolutely.
I mean, you know, between the picnic in Central Park with the wine and the dogs and the road trip, really, really, really put the hard sell on her, didn't you, David?
That's how I roll.
Literally, that's, road trips are magic.
Redford, barefoot in the park.
I know. The proposal wasn't as glamorous, though, because I think we had pulled off to a diner because we were both hungover, hadn't eaten. And we were at this little diner sort of on the way out to head back home. And I was like, hey.
I know.
Is that not what glamour looks like? Have partners? I been doing it wrong?
He got me in a weakened condition. You know, I was just...
Right? Who knew? Cheesy grits. Cheesy grits and an Eggs Benedict is what sealed the deal.
Oh, that's right. It was at Ritter's, Pittsburgh. I'll never forget.
I mean, you could get me to do anything for some grits and some Benedict, you know.
Yeah, if there is a moonshine, my God, what's a girl to do?
Very cool.
And after that, that was it, you know, and I think the hardest thing that we've had to figure out was what my job title was going to be, and finally settled on Chief Brand Development Queen.
Yeah, I love that.
That's great.
Now that'll look handsome on a business card.
It does.
It looks fabulous.
So what has been the strategy so far? Like, are you just like, pop into accounts? I mean, have you been working on any kind of like activations or partnerships with any other like bars, restaurants, retail, even the other collaborations with other brands outside of the spirits in world?
So right now it's really just been a big focus on premise. Doing as many activations as we can that make sense. Because we really are a small brand that's a startup, so we don't have deep pockets. And we're also just trying to feel out where everybody is after the pandemic. You know, there was a long stretch where people just were hanging on for what they could. And, you know, even when things started to open back up, people weren't ready to spend money on anything new or take a chance. And that tide is starting to turn a little bit. So we're definitely getting out there a bit more.
Yeah, it was interesting because, like, I know that right when the pandemic hit, it was like it was like a no-no, a big time no-no to like pop into places and try to sell to them because like we were all just in survival mode, you know, and trying to figure it out, and you know, no one was working on cocktail menus, you know, at the time they weren't trying to like do a seasonal menu. They were just like, you know what? Everyone wants a spicy margarita and a Negroni to go. Like, that's all we're going to do for now and try to get, like, sell through some of our other inventory. So it was a very difficult time to launch a brand like this or any, really. But then also I was wondering, like, being so small, it's like, because I used to work with Brooklyn Gin. I was on that team from basically the beginning. And we ran into some issues of... in the beginning of just not having enough juice to sell. You know, we only had like one day on the still that we could produce. And, you know, what we had is what we had. And it was kind of like, all right, well, we had to be strategic about placements. And I was wondering if there's any of that kind of thought going into this too. Because I know, like you said, you're like just trying to get into the right accounts and everything. I would assume that with kind of a limited supply, it's like it's important to get into those the right accounts to start, correct?
It is. I mean, luckily for us, though, we have a good amount of supply. I mean, my background is supply chain and operations.
Gotcha.
So we're good on the forecasting and having enough juice. Our partners in Statesville are amazing. So that I'm not necessarily worried about. For us being a small brand, the challenge was, you know, as the owner of this kind of going, oh, God, you know, I'm home for a year. What should I do? You know, should I try and get out there and pound the pavement? Because you see other brands doing it. And, you know, other brands that obviously had reps that had much tighter relationships that were able to broker much different deals than I would have been able to just walking in off the street. And you kind of realize, you know, you have to be comfortable knowing that nobody wants to talk to you right now. And so you just kind of hang at home. And, you know, I did a lot of research on potential distributors, lots of research on media outlets, and, you know, just tried to bide my time as best I could and kind of wait for the right moment to get back in front of people again to where I didn't just piss them off.
Yeah, I know what that's about. Cause I do that without even selling anything. yeah. That's how Southern and I kind of got off to our start. Walking in and pissing them off. Anyway, but no, I get that. That's I know that like there's been a lot of different strategies and ideas for sales during this time. Luckily, everything's opening back up though, you know? I know that like one strategy that I helped someone out with, I was like, you know what? He's just starting with his brand. And he was like, how do I get in front of people? I was like, man, here's what you do. Pick 50 accounts, 5,200 accounts, right? And just send everyone a bottle and just say, I'm pretty sure you need a drink right now, or 12. So here you go. Like, just thinking about you, it's one of my favorite bars. And I want you, like, we all need a drink right now. So here you go, you know? And that was actually very effective. Because during this time, it's like we're all trying to help each other out, you know? And, you know, I always think about like the gestures that have happened in my time, especially in New York. You know, it's like sometimes the staff just needs a round of coffees from the bodega or a pizza late night, you know? It's like, and those kind of strategic kind of brand ambassador moves, they go very far. It's like, it's more about the thoughtfulness than the actual product sometimes. And vice versa. I mean, it's just, it's interesting trying to figure out what works best. And I think right now it's like, it's really anything goes. And I think people are just really excited again because they can actually taste new products and bring new stuff in and start, people are thinking about cocktail menus again. And you know, especially in New York, it's like bartenders aren't wearing masks. You know, like you can actually see the bartender. I mean, I hope Souther's still wearing a mask. sorry, Souther, that was low.
Probably for everybody. Probably forever.
Yeah, no, not because of your face. I know that you're a cautious dude. But anyway, the but no, I'm just saying it's exciting trying to figure those things out.
We got to work together because you were the GM, as you mentioned, over the complex, as we know it, right? Which was before the pandemic. It was Honeybee's mother
pearl. It must be exciting for you. I mean, like, I know that virtual.
I've also known some friends of yours from other places because you've been kind of all over the place. And you are a trans woman. How has it been for you to kind of break into, or was there any breaking into bartending and specifically cocktail bartending? And how do you plan to use that maybe as an advantage, or how do you see it as a possible disadvantage in promoting the new company?
Well, when I first moved to New York, I was basically discovered in bartending at a beer-centric restaurant in a mall in Beaver County, Pennsylvania. And it was a gentleman by the name of Jeremy Strawn, and he owned Mulberry Project, the bespoke cocktail bar in Little Italy. And he was opening up a new place, and he was just like, "What the hell are you doing here?" And I was just like, "I'm making drinks." He's like, "No, why are you in a bar in a mall in Beaver County?" And I told him that, you know, it was for family reasons. I had to take care of my grandfather. Unfortunately, good timing. I don't know how really to say this, but, you know, my grandfather passed away, and it gave me the opportunity to move here. And of course, I was a boy at this point, but I don't know. I don't know if it was just the energy of New York or just like I was making this whole new shift sideways and starting this whole new venture. But it was at that point where I decided that I was going to, you know, finally be myself and started my transition. And it was all downhill from there, really. It was such a show. I was going through a lot, dealing with personal demons and addiction because of, you know, when you're living in your own little personal prison, you don't really care what happens to you or your body. It's like, this isn't my life. This isn't my body. I don't care. You know, it's just full throttle. And I ended up homeless. And I call it my kind of like my cocoon phase. Like I ended up living in the system. I was in SROs, the single room occupancy, which is like a dorm building for homeless people. And I was broke and I didn't have a job. And, you know, most of my friends, you know, especially like most of my guy friends were like, "Well, why don't you get a job in a gay bar?" And, you know, for me, it's like there's nothing against that. But when you're a second level sommelier, you have a culinary degree, you've worked in some of the top cocktail bars in the world. You know, for me, I was just like, there's no way I'm going to sell myself short or my community as a trans person by just, you know, submitting to social, you know, rules. You know, I wanted to keep the momentum going of where I had left off. And so I suffered, suffered greatly for a few months until finally I got enough confidence and a good enough wig where I could go out and face the public and put myself out there as a transgendered woman and face that, you know, rejection that I knew that was going to happen. And luckily, I landed a job pretty quickly at a pretty reputable place up in Harlem. And the manager just happened to be a lesbian. I don't know if that helped or whatever, but she was fantastic. She saw, you know, my talent. She saw my experience and judged me by that and my potential. And it was just an amazing, amazing feeling to be able to get back into what I love doing. And my outlook on things was so much brighter, so much friendlier. I just, you know, being myself in my chosen profession was just, such a great feeling. So, and then from there, I, you know, I just kept bouncing to place and, you know, building up my New York reputation, like working at Jaybird Cocktails and serving Jason Latrell cocktails, working for at Fedora in the West Village, which was very cocktail centric restaurant, and just kept on going until eventually, like, I met up with Souther.
That's amazing. Yeah, I'm sure the experience of doing something you love as a person that you love, like, you know, I mean, I don't want to put words in your mouth, but, like, you know, I'm sure it was so much easier to love yourself as your true self and absolutely, having that, you know, internal and external mesh. God, what a feeling. That must have been amazing.
Yeah, I went through a little bit of a drought. It was like, I can't remember what year it was, maybe 2016, 2017. Like, I couldn't find a job to save my life. And I was just like, well, I guess, you know, trans people aren't trending anymore. And, you know, I'm trying to tell these bar managers, I'm just like, you know, on a hospitality level, like, you go into a restaurant, a bar, you know, and you have a great drink, you have great food, you know, service is important. But what are the things that you remember? Is it going to be the 6-foot-tall blonde trans girl behind the bar? Maybe. It's like, I just didn't see how it could fail. I was just like, I provide great service. I'm very talented at what I do. And, I mean, who the hell is going to forget me?
Yeah. I mean, this goes back to something I've been saying for a while, is that diversity is good for business. Like, you know, if you go into a bar and it's populated and staffed entirely by people that are not, you know, people that you identify with visually right off the bat, there's a very good chance that you, however you look, are going to turn around and leave, because you're just going to think, like, this is not my place. Yeah. But if you have a bunch, you know, if there is someone on staff or sitting at the bar that no matter who walks in through that door, they could say, ah, this is a place where someone who looks like me, however I look, is welcome. That from a purely coldly capitalist standpoint, that is just good for business.
It really is. You know, I always say I was changing the hearts and minds of one Republican at a time, you know, being transgender. Like, first, you know, a lot of times, like, they wouldn't really catch on that I was transgendered. And then it was, you know, they'd be asking me about my life, and I'd be like, yeah, you know, I played collegiate sports. I went to Georgetown University. I was a scout sniper for the Marine Corps. And they're like, what? You know, and they're just like, how is that possible? It's like, you know, that I'd lean in real close and be like,
well, I haven't always been this pretty.
And it just the shock and awe.
I mean, without a doubt, hands down, the reason that I took you on is hospitality. I think I've made my reputation on hospitality more than anything else. You know, I guess I'm known for making drinks, but I think I really sell myself as a hospitality, you know, authority. And you came on the scene at up at Honeybees rather. And I was like, yeah, we got to hire this lady. And I was among that group that you just mentioned, because I just thought you were this bawdy, boisterous lady from you know, that a friend of mine in DC told me about. So, you know, Rachel Sergey told me about you. So I was like excited. Yeah, Serge, I was excited to have you on the team for that aspect. But, you know, again, we're starting to run out of time here, but I do want to maybe ask again, like, how do you see this as a potential, and David as well, do you guys see this as a potential, you know, leg up in moving the business forward and getting it in front of people? Or is this potentially maybe damaging? Like, how do you navigate those waters that certainly I don't think any of us on the speakeasy have had to consider in our lives? But, like, how do you navigate that?
Well, I just think personally that first and foremost is the product that we're selling. You know, it's like David said, it comes in a beautiful package, the bottle's Italian, the label's on point, the product inside the container is fantastic. So that's what we're trying to sell. The fact that we're a gay and trans-owned business, I think it benefits us to a point, but I really think that the product, you know, it speaks for itself. That's my opinion.
And I can say, I think it's going to be a mixed bag, to be honest. I think that in some cases it's going to help, and in some cases it's going to hinder us. And my take on that is representation matters, and representation on an executive level matters even more. So, you know, if a gay-owned business and a trans-owned business make you uncomfortable, then don't buy our stuff.
Amen.
You know, like, I'm totally fine with that, because representation matters. And for me, it was more about the talent, just how exceptional Aubrey is as a person. Mm-hmm. And to me, that's what matters.
Yeah, same for me.
Thanks, Heather.
Well, I mean, that is something that I sort of wanted to ask a little bit about, because, you know, you look at the bottle and it's very, you know, it's an incredibly classy bottle. Clearly the focus is meant to be on what's inside and not who has made this. which I think is really interesting. As we mentioned before, you are, to our knowledge, one of the only trans individuals in the distilling space. And by the way, if we are wrong about that, if you're listening to this right now and you are a trans individual in the distilling or brewing or whatever space, please hit us up on Instagram because we'd love to have your story on the show as well. But part of me just thinks does that mean that we have turned one corner of many corners and that, you know, this is a business that just happens to be owned by a gay man and a trans person. And the focus isn't so much on like, look at this LGBTQ business. It's look at this great product that we're making that happens to be produced by members of the LGBTQ community.
I think that's
that's my take on the brand. But to each their own. Like, I think that if you are a queer person or, you know, LGBTQ+, then I think you should do what you feel comfortable with. And if you feel comfortable and you want your brand to be more of the rainbow flag and more of a very forward position on representation, then you should do it. For us, it was more about the juice inside, but certainly not hiding from the fact that we are an incredibly diverse executive team. I mean, even our chief operating officer is a really good friend of mine, openly gay man. Him and his husband live in Connecticut. And, we certainly don't hide from the fact that we are gay owned.
No, I mean, going to bars and being the ambassador for this product, I mean, it's a talking point. You know, not only is it an American heritage spirit, you know, that has been part of, you know, the fabric of this country for, you know, hundreds of years and helped start NASCAR, you know, that has that kind of reputation, but, you know, that also you're supporting, you know, diversity, you're supporting, you know, a marginalized community. And a lot of people are really on board with that, especially with the times being that the way they are.
Yeah, this is awesome. Absolutely. I'm so psyched about this for a billion reasons, but it's also just like, I don't know, this is like, it's such a great story, but I'm sorry I haven't got to try the juice yet, but it's probably mainly because I haven't been in New York. Are you guys...
We'll send you a bottle.
Is it in California? Oh, awesome. That's what I was getting at.
Yeah.
No, yeah, but no, subtle, than anything. I just think that it's so important right now to be just open and aware of each other. I mean, I certainly think that even without a pandemic, I mean, it's like, the pandemic has definitely like closed everyone off, but also opened people up. And I think it's an interesting time, like all these different things coming together. Just, I don't know. It's just a really exciting time. I don't really know what it I'm is. Saying.
I think maybe what you're saying, I don't want to put words in your mouth, David, but I think maybe what you're saying is it's really exciting to be part of normalization. We're normalizing these scenarios by pointing them out, by being aware of them, and then by also, in a strange way, not giving a shit. You know what I mean? I don't care who owns what. If it's delicious juice, I want it. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. But we have to talk about it so that it gets normalized. Man, it's been really a great conversation with you guys. Aside from the few snafus we've had with the audio system, I hope it's not going to affect the show too much for our listeners. But listen, how can we follow along with your successes? I'm sure you have an Instagram that you want to pimp out. What do you got for us, David?
We do, yeah. So we are on Instagram as St. Luna Spirits, and it's all spelled out. And then we are on Facebook as St. Luna Moonshine because St. Luna Spirits was taken. And then our website is stlunaspirits.com. But we post just about everything we're doing, all the different events we have going on. We post all of our cocktail recipes. There are loads and loads to choose from. Some of the more recent ones are just incredible things that Aubrey's come up with. So you'll definitely have to take a look. And then we are online all over the place, caskers.com, reservebar.com, drizzly.com. And then we are just starting to make some progress on premise.
Hopefully it'll be great. Coming this week. Cool. Hint, hint.
Yeah. Are you, David, are you looking into LibDib? Do you know what that is?
I do actually, yeah. So we have a couple distributor relationships kind of waiting to close. So, you know, being a two-person team, we're two-person sales team, we're trying to kind of moderate what we do and make sure we can support it properly.
Yeah, that's great. Slow growth is the best kind of growth, I think, more organic. Well, we are running out of time, so that's it for this week's episode of The Speakeasy. Thanks for tuning in and listening to us, and thanks again for your time, both David and Aubrey. It was really great to have you both on, and I look forward to following your successes all over the place. So thanks again.
You're very welcome.
Yeah, thank you, guys.
Pleasure. Love you guys.
Cheers, everybody.
Cheers.
So you don't shun the devil with your rock and roll load. Knows that country music's gonna save your soul. The devil runs his groove in them rhythm and blues. That's him. It's gonna get you some in the end.
The Speakeasy is powered by Simplecast.
Thanks for listening to the Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to learn more about our 10-year anniversary celebration happening all year long, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Instagram and Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can also find us at facebook.com/heritageradionetwork.
Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be part of the food world's most innovative community? Subscribe to the shows that you like. Tell your friends. And please, join the HRN family by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.